say you will when you won't. You tell me you do, baby, when you don't. Let me know, honey, how you feel. Tell the truth now, is love real? Uh-uh. Oh, honey, don't. Well, honey, don't. Honey, don't. No, honey, don't. Hey, honey, don't. Say you will when you won't. Uh-uh, honey, don't. Well, I love you, baby, and you ought to know. I like the way that you wear your clothes. Everything about you is so doggone sweet. You got that sand all over your feet. So, hey, honey, don't. Around, so hey, honey, don't. Well, honey, don't. Bop, 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 honey, don't. Bop, 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 honey, don't. Well, honey, don't. Say you will when you won't. Honey, don't. Get it, cat, let's go now.
Greatest of all time, Carl Perkins. We're hearing a whole bunch of Sun stuff tonight because we've got one of the Sun legends, Sonny Burgess and the Pacers, in the studio with us this evening here on the Night Prowl Show. I'm Matt the Cat. Thank you so much, Cats and Kittens, for joining me and listening to. We were talking about Warren Smith, so I played Rock and Roll Ruby, which is a song Johnny Cash wrote and Warren Smith recorded, and Johnny Cash ended up singing it later on, but that was Warren Smith's song. Honey Don't, Carl Perkins. Just the Sun stuff for me, and I know you guys must hear this all the time because everyone talks about Sun just in such high regard, but it's that sound, and you guys recorded in that studio. You got that sound on your records too, and people have tried to duplicate it by using amps of the day, mics of the day, Ampex machines of the day, but, you know, everyone I've ever heard quoted is always talking about, well, it was the room. It was the floor. It was the ceiling panels. What do you think? Do you have anything to add to that?
Well,
where'd the sound come from, Sonny?
J.M. Van Eaton, you know, drums and played a lot of sessions there. J.M. says it's the room. I never thought that much of being the room. I simply thought it was the sound that Sam Phillips and Jack Clements created. And everybody said the magic was in the room. But DJ Fontana says the magic departed when Elvis, Perkins, Orvis, and all that bunch left, Charlie Rich, and all. When they left, the magic for that room left. In other words, people have come back and recorded that, but it's never duplicated.
Right.
So I think it's more Sam Phillips and Jack Clements. Mm.
Okay, so Redheaded Woman, backed with We Want a Boogie, comes out. Then enter Bobby Crawford. Now, when did Bobby actually enter the band? Bobby?
August of 57.
August of 57. So We Want a Boogie had been out for like a year at that point, hadn't it? About?
Right, yeah.
Okay, so what was the first session you sat in on, you worked on?
Find My Baby for Me session when we did all that. And then Thunderbird, Itchy, the instrumental that we did, with Riley playing with it on us. But
how'd you meet the guys? How'd they bring you on board?
Well, I heard that Jack Nance was leaving to go with Conway Twitty, and they need a drummer. And I got a hold of them and went and tried out.
So you weren't just looking for a gig. You wanted to play with the Pacers.
Yes.
Because you heard the record.
Yeah, I had a little band, and I had heard the records, yeah. And actually...
Did you think you could keep up with them?
Well, you know, an old story that I tell, they were playing this club in my area. I was there, and that's where I heard that they needed a drummer. The owner of the club, we were playing, my little band was playing there, and he said, they're looking for a drummer. I said, fine, I'll call him tomorrow and try to get a job. He says, don't waste your time. You're not good enough. And I call him. A week later, they walk in, and I walk in with them, and that guy's mouth fell open, you know.
What club was that?
At the Spot in Desert.
Oh, yeah.
But it was
Spot.
Yeah, it was really funny, you know, and to walk in there and see that guy's mouth fall down, you know.
And when you would record in at Sun, was it, you guys didn't do very many takes, right? You guys had to get it within the first couple takes. I mean, you couldn't do like Elvis did when he went to RCA and he did like 31, 33 takes of a song. I mean, you didn't have that luxury with Sam, right? And Jack. Or did you? I'm asking.
No, we didn't do, no. If we couldn't get them in two or three, maybe four takes, no, we didn't do it. Let's just say we want to hear it again. You know, can you do a little of this or something like that? But otherwise, no, we didn't cut. It's kind of like, I'm kind of like Jerry Lee on that. Jerry Lee said, you know, if I can't get it the first or second time, forget it. Go on to something else.
But how much rehearsing would you do before going into the studio?
We never rehearsed.
You didn't rehearse.
We simply played these songs in the club. We played, we did mostly all dances till Bob Neal started booking us on the Sun package shows.
So if it worked on stage, you tried to convert it in the studio, and it just didn't work in the studio, you just dropped the tune.
Yeah. That's why you had so many outtakes and stuff, like I said, no telling how many. See, we did a song in 56, 57, 56, I guess it was, called According to My Heart. And we really hooked it. We got it good. But Jim Reeves in the country field had a number one hit with that song at that time. When Jack played it for Sam Phillips, Sam loved it. He was going to put it out. And then he hears that, you know, Jim Reeves got the number one hit. Then he never released it. That's one of the things I told you, it's never appeared. Mm. But we really had a good cut on it.
Yeah, we had a good, great cut on it.
So it might exist in somebody's basement somewhere.
I doubt it. I still think they erased all that tape, a lot of it.
Yeah.
Used them over and over.
Now, you guys, you're still recording today, occasionally. And what do you think is the, what do you find? Do you find it's easier or harder today with the style of recording versus the style that Jack Clement and Sam Phillips used back in the 50s? Is it more difficult to record nowadays or less difficult, do you think? I guess what I'm getting at, too, is overdubbing and all the computer, you know, recording to hard drive, not to tape.
Well, I think it's a little bit easier because you don't have the pressure of having to do it one time. If somebody messes up, why then you don't have to go back and recut the whole thing because everybody's on a separate track. So you don't probably have to play under the pressure that we did over there because it's one track and you either did it right or, you know.
One voice track and one instrument track. That's all
it.
But you know, there's a lot of feel to that, though, because you're all playing together. I mean, if your piano part isn't right, Kern, then you go back and cut the piano part, but the other guys aren't playing with you now. You're just playing alone.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
Does it disturb the feel?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe we don't have quite the exuberance and the enthusiasm we had in the studio then because we were all young and impressionable and, excited. And today, I always look forward to recording, but maybe we don't have the excitement about it that we used to. Maybe it's the age caught up with us.
No, I don't think it's that at all.
I personally like recording live because you do get a better feeling. I do. It's a better feeling to me. If everything is right, if the music's flowing in the right groove, it really feels good.
And if somebody wants to see you live, and they're not in the Washington, D.C. area to catch those shows in the next couple of days in the Washington, D.C. area, you're going to Austria next, right?
Right.
And that's kind of far for most people to travel. But when are you coming back to the States?
Oh, let's see. We play October the 28th, so we'll be back on
The 30th.
The 30th.
Yeah, 30th.
Oh, that's the day before Halloween.
Yeah.
You guys have a Halloween gig?
No.
That's probably good.
We'll be, the first weekend in November, we're playing a college. We're actually going back to where myself and Jack Nance went to college. And we're playing for the alumni, like 50-year reunion at UCA in Conway, Arkansas. Jack went to college there, and Jack and I met there when he was going to college there.
And if people want to see an entire list of your upcoming tour dates, they could go to www.legendarypacers.com, and it's spelled exactly how it sounds. So that's I want to play one of your more recent records. Tell me about Hell Yes I Cheated. What was the inception of that song?
That song was written by my cousin, Larry Churcher, who spent 15 years in Nashville writing songs for a living. And he wrote them with the old boy that wrote Almost Persuaded. I can never think of his name when I want to. But anyway, he was married to Lynn Anderson.
Oh, okay.
And that was a job. Larry said they take their briefcase and they go down every day there in Nashville. Like a job. Like you come to work. And they write songs. They pitch ideas off. Mm-hmm. And they wrote Hell Yes, I Cheated. And it's been recorded by a lot of people. It's never been a hit. But it's one of the most popular songs on jukeboxes in places like that. That anybody would want to write.
And you recorded this in like the mid-90s, right?
Yeah.
97?
Yep.
And it's done pretty well for you.
That's the Gary Talent album, the one I did with Bruce Springsteen's bass player for Rounder Records.
Right. And you still play this live? Do you guys play it live?
Yeah, it's a big song.
Can we expect to hear it at the Kennedy Center and at the...
If they want to hear it, we'll do it, yeah.
All right, let's hear it right now. Hell Yes, I Cheated, Sonny Burgess and the Pacers.
Hell yes, I cheated. No. Hell yes, I cheated.